My husband lost his job this past week, and consequently I quit my part-time job in order to look for something full-time. Sometimes life is not so grand. Sometimes it feels like nothing is going the way you planned. In this episode, we talked to two people who took what we might call setbacks and leaned into them, making the best of what others might consider to be too difficult. We begin with Carol Adams, a grandmother who lives with a disability. She gave up her profession to move down the street from her grandson and became his primary caregiver. In The Stretch It Takes, I talk about chronic pain and other debilitating illnesses that make it hard to function on a daily basis. How do we as grandparents maintain a relationship with those we love when we are physically hurting? And finally, Mark McAlevey, the grandson of two deaf grandparents, helps us get a perspective on what many might consider a disability. To the contrary, his very able deaf grandparents were his bedrock. Mark was fully aware of their love for him, spoken both aloud and with signing. Our first guest, Carol, had been an active, thriving woman, a chiropractor with a good practice, and a life of investing in others. Her path took an unexpected turn when her health did, and she now finds herself confined to a scooter with limited mobility. But that literally has not slowed her down. Carol, it's nice to be in your home. Thank you for letting us come in.
Oh, you're most welcome anytime.
One of the reasons why I wanted to interview you was because my grandchildren live on a street really close to your home. And for the years that they've lived here, I've seen you going back and forth in an electric wheelchair. Is that what you would call it?
This one's a scooter, but I've also had a wheelchair.
Okay. Yeah. And you're like the Pied Piper. I mean,
yes.
You've got all these kids who walk to school and they're or walk back from school or to school, and they're you're leading the pack, and they've got their lunch bags, they're throwing them in the back and doing all sorts of fun things. How did you get to the place where you live here, you have a grandchild here, and you also have a disability?
So the disability was somewhat unexpected, obviously. I was a very healthy, very, very active woman. I was racing and running and climbing mountains and so on. And a few months later, because of an injury, I ended up in a wheelchair. At the time, my grandson was an infant and I was taking care of him full time. So that's just the way it was. Mm. You know, I still had a kid and now I had a wheelchair. It didn't change anything. It just kind of added the wheelchair. So you just simply adapt to what you're given. And
did you ever expect to be confined that way?
Oh, no.
I mean, in terms of like even after the injury, did you think, oh, well, I'm going to get better. Things are going to get better.
At the time, it was supposed to be very short term, and it turned into being much more permanent. At first, I was in a wheelchair all the time. Now I'm lucky. I have a mobility scooter, and I do have the ability to walk for very limited distances, a few steps at a time. So in a way, I'm fortunate. The other fortunate thing is it's really primarily my left foot which is affected. Doesn't seem like it would matter, but your right foot is your driving foot. Mm. I can still drive, which is huge.
Yeah.
So them's the cards I was dealt.
Yeah, I love your attitude, because what you're telling me is these are the things I can do.
Yeah.
Instead of these are the things I can't do. Because I think as grandparents, often when things like that get in the way, they just give up. They say, well, I can't do that anymore.
Well, I didn't really have the choice. I had a young child that I was caring for at the time. He was an infant. Mm-hmm. So my choices were to not care for him and have to send him to a daycare, which neither his parents nor I wanted, or learn to adapt. So it was only a foot. I don't have Alzheimer's. I don't have cancer. It's only a foot. You figure it out.
Yeah, there are workarounds.
Yeah, there's
so workarounds. You've overcome that. And not only overcome it, but I think been thriving in that situation. When I think about you going to, you know, you could choose to sit in your house and say, well, I'm not going to go get them at school. I mean, how long? This has been a while now. How old is your grandson?
He's seven.
He's seven. So yeah. You've been in this situation for 7 years.
Yes.
And how do you get up in the morning and do that? I mean, that's a lot to get him to school. Or do you just, how do you look at that?
It's not so different than anyone else. You know, you just simply get up and do it. I've never felt that it was a terrible burden.
Yeah.
More of a shift. Not, certainly not what I would have chosen for myself, but it's what is.
Have there been times when you've struggled and thought, you know, this is just too hard? Or is your attitude always so positive?
I also took care of my mother. My mother died at 101, and she lived with me until just a few weeks before she died. That was the most difficult time because she required additional, you know, more and more and more care. So that was a struggle, more physically. But I can't say there was ever a time when I just felt like, oh, this is more than I can bear. So no, I don't think that's ever been an issue. I don't think I've ever just allowed myself to wallow in that.
So Carol, where does that come from? Is that genetic? Do you think your mom and dad were like that? Your grandparents? Who did you get that from, you
think? My father was. My mother wasn't. My mother was a victim mentality all her life. And I think partly because of looking at her and thinking, I'm not going to be like that. I'm going to make other choices.
So she was a non-example.
Yeah,
she was a
non-example.
Yeah.
I'm also a retired chiropractor. And over the years, I've seen people suffer terribly. For the most part, it's a choice. A physical injury or illness, physical illness, malady, is not an end of the road. It's just a choice to either kind of accept it and figure it out or move on. I practiced in a very rural community, a lot of farmers, a lot of blue-collar workers, people that worked for a living using their body and their body functions. You just simply have to overcome that.
Yeah, you power through.
You
overcome, you
yeah.
work it
yeah.
out. Yeah.
You know, I'm so lucky. This is not a chronic pain issue. This is just a mobility issue.
Yeah.
That's all.
Chronic pain is really difficult.
It's a whole different ballgame.
It really
it's
is.
It's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with Henry, your grandson here. How has this affected him having a grandmother who often has to use a wheelchair or a scooter?
Well, Henry doesn't know any different. So, that's as close as I ever come to kind of wallowing in self-pity, because sometimes I think, oh, I want to go walk the beach, or I want to take him to the mountains, and I want to hike, or I want to do things that I've always done. And I'm limited, but Henry doesn't know any different. So to him, that again is a non-issue, because he doesn't know that Grandma used to love the beach, or Grandma used to hike the mountains. What Henry knows is, oh, Grandma and I can get on the wheelchair and we can go out at night and wrapped in a blanket and see all the lights and zoom around the neighborhood. That's his norm. You know, his norm is what I am now. So it's made him, if anything, much more empathetic towards people, much more aware that people may need help or people may have other abilities. You know, he from the time he's been tiny, he's always been able to help me pick things up or go get things or whatever, because that, again, is our reality. So it's kind of made him in some ways more mature or more in tune to the need to help others, to be aware of others.
I love that. And you know, the interesting thing is as well is that you have affected other children in the neighborhood mm-hmm. too, because they see you, you know, doing what you do. It's just natural. It's just part of who you are. And they don't think a thing of it. So you have kind of opened their eyes to the differently abled and helped them see what it is to be
right.
differently abled.
Right. Well, I'm the head of the school.
Yes.
You know, so many of the kids have said to Henry how they wished that their grandmother had a scooter, because, you know, Henry rides on the scooter. And I'm thinking, wow, I have a scooter because I can't walk and they can walk. But in the kids' minds, that's not a trade-off. I have this school scooter. So
that's so great. It's so great that positive attitude can affect so many different people and have such far-reaching effects on people. So today's a rainy day. The audience might even hear that rain in the background. So on a rainy day, what do? You said now your right foot works, so you can actually use your car.
So I can use my car. So I can't use my scooter in the rain. It's a battery-operated scooter, and it will short out. So I will drive.
Yeah.
I can drive. I do have that ability, which is lovely.
Yeah, and it's not going to stop you. It's raining, yeah, so I have to stay here and get somebody else to do it for me.
But I am very lucky because a lot of people in my situation can't continue to drive. It's very difficult to get around as a disabled person, much more so. It's very nice with the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, but the reality is to get on and off the metro is a nightmare. You get someplace, the elevator isn't working. Well, if the elevator is not working, I'm stuck in the subway tunnel. I have to get back on the subway and go somewhere else. I can't just walk up the stairs or go up the escalator. There's still a lot of places that it's very awkward or difficult. If there isn't a curb cut, I can't go.
Yeah.
If I get to a store and they don't have an electric scooter available, I can't shop. I have to go to another store. So there are things that are more difficult.
Yeah, I can see how that could really affect you. We need more children like Henry who will grow up to become architects or designers and who have grandparents like you.
Or politicians that are aware that we need to continue to improve this system.
Yeah, exactly. So. And I understand you have other grandchildren as well, and you travel to see them?
I have one other grandchild. And he's just a few months old now. And one five-day weekend a month, I go and take care of him. His mom is in the military, and one weekend a month, she's a pilot, and she has to work, so.
Oh, she in the reserves?
No, she's full-time.
Oh, she's full-time.
Military, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're taking care of?
She's a commander. She's a lieutenant colonel.
Oh, my goodness. Is this your daughter?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so proud of that. That's wonderful.
Yes, she outranks all of the boys in the family. Works for me.
Congratulations. So you have another grandson?
Mm-hmm. Grandson.
Okay. And you take care of him as well. So mm-hmm. this is just way more, I think, than even a fully abled grandparent might do.
But so. If I were fully abled, I might have made other choices.
Do you think?
Not personally, no. But I can see where other people that weren't that didn't have disabilities would opt not to devote their life to their grandchildren. And that's fair. That's right. But I looked around when Henry was coming and I thought, I'm retired. I have nothing else I'd rather do. And I have a life outside of grandmotherhood. That's not my whole life.
What kinds of things keep you occupied?
Well, I teach water aerobics. Once I'm in the water, my disability is a non-issue because I'm in the water, and it's wonderful.
In summary, I'm curious what this attitude that you have brought to grandparenting, what has it given to you? You obviously may have made many sacrifices, but what have you received from the kind of investment that you've made in your grandchildren?
A lot of my friends are childless. I'm a professional woman, and there's a lot of professional women that chose not to have children in my generation. And I look at their lives and I think, wow, we're all struggling with who we are. Where do we belong? What's to become of us now? I have a connectedness that they can't find. And that's so priceless. I have a reason. I have a purpose. I'm not just doing another yoga class. I'm affecting young lives, and in a very positive way. And there's nothing wrong with their lives, but when I look at my life, I feel like I have so much more richness and fulfillment that I never even felt like when I was raising the kids, because at the time I was busy and I was working and it was crazy and I had all these kids and but now that I can step back as a wise old gnome and look, it's pretty remarkable. He had the option of being with someone who cherished him and gave him one-on-one attention, and I had the option of having someone who cherished me and gave me one-on-one attention.
The stretch it takes is a time to think about flexibility in our relationships. How are we doing? Are we stretching the relationship muscles enough so that when faced with difficulties with our children or their children, we can work through it without too much pain? Can we bend our will to someone else's when necessary? Today, we literally go to the mat to talk about how we deal with chronic pain and illness. Is it possible to keep our relationship strong when we're just trying to take the next breath, get through the day without another painkiller or a spasm that puts us on our back? Let's go to the mat and work through this aging process together. My husband's grandmother, Granny Lou, had a very obvious case of arthritis. Her fingers looked almost mangled, bent at the first and second knuckles. Through it all, I hardly ever heard her complain. She would make full-out meals for the family, and despite the pain that I could only imagine, she painted china for a hobby. As she aged, we could tell that the arthritis was getting worse. Her carefully crafted paintings of daisies and roses were telling the tale. The fine lines were a little thicker, the petals on the roses not so well defined. Her creations were fired in a kiln for posterity. And now, every time I look at a cup or a saucer that she painted and I see the aberrations, I realize how hard the pain must have been for her to endure. If you haven't gotten to the point where you've experienced chronic pain of some sort, consider yourself lucky. About 6 months ago, I was struck with some sort of virus that had me literally crawling up the stairs. We didn't know if it was rheumatoid arthritis, Lyme disease, fibromyalgia, or lupus. All I knew was that I was in a great deal of pain, and it wouldn't subside. I started to understand how people can get addicted to painkillers, how they snap at others, especially the ones closest to them. And every time I was with the grandchildren, it was all I could do to ignore the pain that shot through my limbs. And I started to recognize that chronic pain is life-altering, and it's not for the faint of heart. I love every minute I spend with our grandchildren, and so to have every visit laced with pain was torture for me. So what do we do with that? Well, here's what I learned from my own experience. First, you make sure you're not alone in the pain. People need to know what's happening to you, and to pretend it isn't doesn't really help anyone. When I kept having to ask for help, I would often say, "I can't open the cereal box," or "I can't cut up the celery." My husband started coaching me to approach my disability by stating a request instead of repeating negative statements like, "I can't." So instead, I would say, "Can you help me open this box? Or would you mind cutting up the celery for me?" He encouraged me to stay positive and open to help. What you say and think matters. Stay vulnerable and positive as much as possible. Secondly, you do what you need to cope. If that means taking many breaks, not participating in some things in order to sleep or to rest, then you need to do that. Know your boundaries. Grandchildren understand limitations, and if you have restrictions, let them know, but also reassure them that you love them and you will do all you can to make sure they know that. If you can't bend down on the floor, then have them join you on the couch. If you can't sit in a chair comfortably, then invite them to lie down on the bed with you while you close your eyes and tell them a story. Now, this last thing is hard because it takes work and sometimes money. You need to get help from wherever you can. If it means ordering a supplement online that seems like it might work, try it. If it means seeking unconventional means to help with the pain, go for it. If it requires diet and exercise that you're not really keen on, make the sacrifice. You are worth it, and your relationships are too. Being proactive will ensure that you don't stay in victim mode. It's important to take charge of your own health. Be your own advocate. The reality for some is that it sometimes costs a lot of money to battle a chronic disease, and sometimes there is no coming back from it. I was fortunate that whatever I had lasted only 4 months. But during those months, I was miserable. When it was over, I was more grateful than ever for days when I can sleep and wake with no pain. And it made me appreciate the plight of others and become more empathetic to those around me. My hope is that you are able to find help from good people who care and are invested in your health, and that you'll be able to find the energy to both get the help and to help yourself. If you are battling chronic pain and want to share your story, please write to me at grandlifeconnection@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 317-572-7876. Aging is hard, but it doesn't have to be the end of the relationships you value most. Sometimes it's hard for us to see how much our lives matter to our grandchildren. If we had a special relationship with our own grandparents, we might have an inkling. But for many who have had a fairly distant connection, we might not really get what it means to our grands to enjoy us. I had the privilege of talking with Mark, whose grandparents were both deaf and who both burrowed their way into Mark's life from his birth. It really didn't matter to him that they were deaf, but it made a huge difference in his life in the best way possible. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about when you first realized that they were deaf and they were different than maybe other people's grandparents.
Such a great question, because I distinctly remember it.
Really?
Yeah, I was, and it was older. I was in elementary school. I was maybe 9 or 10 years old, so about third or fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a neighbor who lived across the street from me who was my age. We were in the same grade, and he was originally from San Diego and always spoke of his grandparents. I, you know, mind you, too, I have hearing grandparents
right.
and deaf grandparents. Just
okay.
One set's hearing, one set's deaf. And my deaf grandparents were the ones that lived closer. They were the ones that babysat when my parents went out. They were the live-in grandparents, you know, when my parents were out of town on trips and such. So they were the more immediate grandparent. And I remember when my friend and neighbor, who would talk about his grandparents often, and I met them for the first time, and we all were going to go. They were taking me and my brother and my friend and his sister out to yogurt, because it was in the 80s and yogurt was,
yeah.
frozen yogurt was like huge then.
It was. TCBY.
That's where we went. We went to TCBY. And I remember driving down the road to get yogurt with them, and they were talking in the car, and they were asking us questions while we were driving to TCBY. And I distinctly remember feeling like it was strange, because when I drive with my grandparents in the car, mm-hmm. they talk with their hands and they make noises, and it's loud, but there isn't that vocal kind of conversation. And it's often riding in the car with my grandparents was kind of scary because my grandpa would often drive and would sign while he was driving, and most of the time he would use both hands, so it was a quick you know, sign the hands back on the steering wheel, and it was never good if there was an argument, right?
Oh yeah,
between my grandma and my grandpa, or one of us and my grandpa while he was driving, because then it got really scary, because he, you know,
let go of the wheel.
Yeah, for long periods of time. Like, grandpa, put your hands back on the wheel.
That's hilarious.
So, and I remember thinking, like, we're having this conversation with my friend's hearing grandparents going to yogurt, and I didn't feel scared about the car going off the road. It was a calm conversation. And it was at that moment that I realized, oh, not everybody's grandparents are like mine. Like
yeah.
this. And I knew it.
Sure.
But it just dawned on me at that moment, like, oh, this it means something bigger than just having deaf grandparents. And that moment in the car, that's when I realized that my grandparents were different.
How did you connect with your grandparents? You didn't sign, did you?
I did.
Oh, you did
yeah,
sign.
Yeah.
How did you learn that?
So sign language, ASL, is actually a lot easier to pick up than verbal or written language. Just being around my grandparents often was helpful, you know, that kind of immersion into ASL. Mm-hmm. And I knew signs before I knew the alphabet. I remember the moment, I was probably 4, when I memorized the entire alphabet. And there's a difference between ASL and, you know, sign language and the alphabet.
When you're spelling it out.
Yes, yes. Yeah. When I memorized A through Z, signing with my hand, my grandparents got there and I ran out to the car to see them and quickly like rip through the alphabet, you know, with my
You're
hand.
You're so proud.
I was so proud.
I bet they were too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The funny thing is I knew how to sign, as did my brother, as do most kids when they grow up with some connection to deaf culture. I knew how to sign before I knew how to speak.
Wow. And you've retained that because do you still have a relationship with your grandparents? Are they still alive?
So sadly, they aren't. And that's an interesting phenomenon with deaf culture. We have a friend in the deaf community who wrote a book called One Generation Thick. And it's this notion that for most people, deafness is one generation. Both of my grandparents have a couple of brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. Who were deaf.
Wow.
But most of them were hearing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we have any record of deafness before them.
Okay.
There could be, but just, you know, our record keeping doesn't necessarily show it. And in the way that we handled people who were deaf
back then was very different.
Very different. Yeah. So it's very possible that there were generations of both of those sides of my family that didn't have any deafness. And then, you know, one generation had a couple of deaf people, and luckily for me, they met and created my family, yeah. In essence, right?
So when they died, do you have a sadness not only to have lost them, but also to have lost the deaf culture in your family?
I always said, well, it's one generation thick, but it is one thick generation. I mean, it made an impact on us.
Yeah.
And culturally, the way that I view the world is shaped by my grandparents' deafness, and that's a positive thing for me. Like, I embrace that. There was tons of people, deaf people, at both of their funerals, right? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. It's just like the whole deaf community came out, and that's how they roll. I mean, sure. It's a tight knit community.
Of course, it would be. I would think.
Yeah.
So you have that in common.
Yeah, and so I remember saying at my grandma's funeral, now that my grandma's passed, like, don't be a stranger. We want to be involved with your lives. Like, mm-hmm. We don't want to disengage from the deaf community just because my grandparents are passing away.
And how has that worked out?
You know, we don't engage with the deaf community as much. The real liaison for me between here, the hearing world and the deaf world, was actually my mom, because she was everything to my grandparents. Mm-hmm. You know, and my mom had a great relationship with both of them. Mm-hmm. Now, any kind of deaf connection I have to the deaf community really comes through my mom. And if she engages with some of her friends that she grew up with who were CODAs or, you know, who are deaf and still is involved with, it's actually really interesting because we're moving my mom this week into an assisted living facility.
Oh.
And one of the things that we are looking at are assisted living facilities that may have deaf community, because we feel like that's important for her as she ages, like, yeah. To have that familiarity,
yeah, sure.
with culture and context.
Interesting. Can you explain what CODA is? You referenced that.
Yeah. So that is the short term for Children of Deaf Adults.
Okay.
And it is a large or international organization. It is hearing. There are deaf people who are children of deaf adults as well, mm-hmm. obviously. But I would say that a majority of the people who are involved with CODA are hearing children of deaf adults. The real essence of it is just to share and connect and celebrate and deal with some of the things that you are faced with from the cultural standpoint.
Yeah, and you know, I've gotten the impression that deaf communities are happy with what we would call a plight, not having their hearing. We would think that would be, but for them, it's something that binds them together and that they're positive about. Is that correct? Did you feel that way with your grandparents?
Absolutely. I never see deafness as a disability. I never see it as a deficiency. I think it's really easy in our very medical minded Western world to look at something like the lack of hearing and see it as a problem or a negative or a deficiency. But I've never subscribed to that line of thought. And I think it's shaped the way that I look at other things that people consider to be a problem. You know, that was a really interesting realization that I had as I was growing up, was that the hearing world always approached my grandparents like they were faulty, you know, in funny way, in comical ways, you know, like when you would go to restaurants and I'd tell someone, oh, these are my grandparents and they're deaf. And the server or the hostess would just speak up and start, you know, and speak slower, like louder and slower.
Yeah.
What do you want for dinner? They're still not going to hear you. You know, that's like a common, like, shared joke in the deaf community. But also in other ways too, you know, the way, like, there's awful examples of deaf people getting taken advantage of. The history of deaf community and deaf culture and doctors and lawyers and that
taking
kind of
advantage of people.
Yeah. Mm. And the establishment of trust between the deaf and the hearing world. Mm-hmm. The challenge for me has never been around my grandparents and their deafness, but the challenge for me has always been around the hearing world.
Interesting.
And navigating that. And sure. I would say that's probably shared with, like, my mom and, mm-hmm. and other folks who, you know, are culturally deaf or but are hearing and have to navigate those two worlds.
How would you describe, if you could kind of put some description around your relationship with your grandparents?
They were love. I mean, my grandparents were everything that grandparents should be, I feel like. You know, they were like the unicorns in your life. You know, my grandparents were always there for us. They loved us unconditionally. We were really close. You know, I was holding my grandma's hand when she died. Mm. I was on the way to the nursing home when my grandpa died and was there moments after he passed away. They were instrumental forces in my life, in my brother's, our lives.
You know, when I think of my grandchildren, one of my favorite things to do with my grandchildren is read them books, have them sit with me, read them books. So what is your memory of that?
I have, like, goosebumps. So there is something about the deaf voice that is just precious. And my grandma, she became deaf at the age of 3. My mm-hmm. grandpa was born deaf. And even having that few years of
hearing,
she was able to develop a little bit better vocal communication than my grandpa. And so she would read us books and she would tell us stories. She would sign often when she would do those things. But both of their voices were just so precious, you know. Yeah. And whenever I hear deaf people, I get goosebumps and I have been known to tear up, you know, like it's an emotional experience. The deaf voice is so powerful. And in fact, when both of them died, I remember thinking, or I heard a lot of people say, and this is both deaf people and hearing people say, well, in heaven, deaf people can hear. And I kind of, like, I got that, but I also thought that was kind of a bummer. Like, when I go to heaven, I want to see my grandparents and I want to hear their deaf voice. You know, I don't want to.
That's beautiful, Mark. Right?
Like,
that's
beautiful. I don't want to see them being
that hearing. They wouldn't be themselves.
Yeah.
That's who they are to you.
Yeah. So that's a great question. Like, they did things that I think a lot of grandparents who are hearing did, but they did it in their deaf way. And that makes it even more special for me.
Yeah. I can totally see how that would happen because it's just a warmth and comfort. To hear those voices, it's what you've heard since you were a baby.
Yeah.
And you associate it with warmth and love.
Yeah.
And so why wouldn't that be something you'd still want to maintain when you get to see them again?
And there were moments too, like my brother and I were both very musical. And I remember doing, like, piano recitals when I was, you know, in elementary school. And they would come and I would always do the recital before, like I would play for them what I played at the recital mm-hmm. at my own piano, and just they would put their hand on it and feel it. That, you know, there are certain things like that. The only time I ever got paid to dance, back then a lot of cities had deaf clubs where deaf people would come and congregate. And they would do things like poker nights and pitch-ins and stuff like that. So the Indianapolis Deaf Club was a place that we've visited often. I spent many weekends there. And they have a jukebox. And when I was a kid, Herbie Hancock's Rocket was like all the rage, right? I mean, you remember that song? It's such a great song. And this is like in the 80s with Parachute Pants and Michael Jackson and Electric Boogaloo and all that stuff. So we go to the Deaf Club, and the Deaf Club is absolutely the loudest place in the city. Between like the deaf people and the noises that they make and the shouting and the hollering and the music, because they have to turn the music up really loud.
To feel it, right?
To feel it.
Yeah.
So anyways, we at some point we cranked up Rocket, and my brother and I, we were like 5 and 6 years old, do this breakdance routine. And we there was like a crowd of deaf people around us.
Oh, man.
And when we finished, one of the old deaf men, who was like one of my grandpa's best friends, came over to me and gave me a handshake. And when I shook his hand, I pulled my hand away, and there's a $5 bill in my hand. And that's a big deal, right?
When you're
like 5 years old.
I have one other thought. When you're walking with your grandparents when you were a child, were there silent times? Were they okay with silence, or did they want to use their voice all the time?
Yeah, there were silent times. It's a great question. I've never thought of that. I remember it in the car. One of the noises that reminds me of my grandparents the most is the sound of a turn signal. You know, I think like, I don't know if my kids even know, like I have two kids and
yeah.
I don't think that they know that when you turn on a turn signal, it makes a noise, a clicking noise.
Because there's all sorts of other noises going on,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. But when we were in the car with our grandparents, most of the time, if they weren't arguing, or and I mean arguing like, you know, where are we going to dinner? I don't know. Where do you want to go to dinner? That kind of
yes.
thing.
Yes.
When a lot of times in the car, it was quiet. There was no radio on, you know, there was, and we were just sitting there. And so I would always hear the turn signal.
Yeah.
And so now whenever I hear the turn signal, I typically think about my grandparents and the silent moments in the car. And I never really
put that together
until you asked me that question.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
One of my favorite stories is about music, and my grandpa, he bought cars. He would buy a car every 5 or 6 years, and he loved Buicks and Oldsmobiles. He was very proud of his cars, and he always liked to tout the stereos in his cars. And when I was in high school, he came over with a new car. He was the kind of guy that kept the sticker on the window for like a month after he bought the car. Gave us a new Buick. And he came over to show it off with my grandma. And my mom was like, hey, why don't you guys go up and grab one of those rap tapes so that grandpa can hear his stereo. So we grabbed NWA, which is a very explicit, you know, every other word is a cuss word. but has lots of heavy bass in it, so you can feel it.
Of course.
But we didn't think anything about the content because they couldn't hear it. They could just feel it. And I thought that they were just going to put it in so he could listen to it for a few moments. They put it in. It was in the summer. They put it in, and they drove off with NWA blaring from their Oldsmobile with the windows down.
That's a great story.
And I just pictured these two white-haired deaf grandparents going around 465 with this vulgar rap music.
I love it.
And I told, we told them, knew about it later. Like I told them about it. You know, I didn't, but you know, there were lots of moments
story.
Like that where like the hearing and the deaf world combined in a humorous way. You had asked me before this to think about how I pass this on to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it is one thick generation. And it does absolutely pass down. And I would say that the one way that I can see it with my kids is that my kids really do embrace diversity. Like, they really do see people for their gifts and talents and for what they have to offer, and not for like a deficiency. And I feel like it's not like I've ever shared that with them. It's just been a cultural wave, and I love that.
If you have enjoyed this episode, I'd love to hear from you. Please connect through email, grandlifeconnection@gmail.com, or Facebook at The Grand Life. We also have just started an Instagram account. You can go to Grand Life Connection, all one word, to join us.
Next time on The Grand Life.
My mom would make lutefisk for my dad and my grandparents, and she made baked ham for everybody who didn't want the lutefisk. I trusted my mom when she said it doesn't taste good.
The thing that we remember the most was the homemade spaghetti sauce from scratch she would make. Vast quantities of it, three generations of homemade spaghetti sauce. They all look forward to it.
My mother taught me how to make spaghetti with bacon. Did you ever hear of that?
No.
So good.
That's next time on The Grand Life.
You matter to us, and we love to know what you are enjoying about this podcast. We're all in this together, in the pain and the great pleasure of this grandparenting journey. I don't pretend to be the best grandparent ever, but I will confess to believing that being one is the best thing ever. I'm Emily Morgan, and this is The Grand Life.
Today's podcast was written and hosted by Emily Morgan, my grandmother. It was produced and edited by Mike Morgan, my grandfather.